Welcome back to Hyphenated America, where we make immigration laws and policies easier to understand. I'm Sophia.
And I'm Maria. This week, we'll be discussing a very important aspect of the immigration space, advocacy and community building work. Later on in the episode, I spoke to Reina Montoya Valiento about her work and advocacy organization, which she leads.
So there are many different forms of immigration advocacy. These can include legal aid, you know, due process in court. We talk about pregnant women in detention, you know, access to medical and mental health care, you know, detention oversight. We talk about prolonged detention, family separation, and family detention in past episodes of Hyphenated America.
Aside from those main pressing issues, which advocacy helps out with, we sometimes forget about the emotional toll of being undocumented. Just as much as immigrants need legal help, immigrant families also need a community to get support from that can help them emotionally.
So there are many examples of advocacy organizations that do a great deal of unique work with regards to immigration. So Border Angels, they do detention oversight. You know, the ACLU does a great deal of legal aid. We're going to specifically talk about the ways in which they have done some incredible work with regards to immigration. They've sued DHS in the past for ways that they have circumvented COVID-19 restrictions, and Doctors for Camp Closure, who advocate for better medical care for migrants in detention. At a time when immigrants are especially vulnerable, it has been the role of immigration advocates to raise these issues and pressure politicians and other policymakers to address the needs of immigrants.
Just like Sophia said, immigration advocates have a specific role in just uplifting the concerns and needs of immigrants, especially when those are ignored in the larger public sphere. So just a great example of someone who's always bringing these issues to light and doing real tangible work to empower immigrants is Reina Montoya. I spoke to her. She's a founder of Aliento, a community-based immigration advocacy organization in Arizona. Their mission statement says that they're a community organization that is DACA, undocumented, and youth-led. They are directly impacted people and allies who are invested in the well-being, emotional healing, and leadership development of those impacted by inequalities, by lack of their immigration status. One particular thing I loved about my conversation with Reina is how undocumented and mixed status families are centered in the work that they do and how that specific mission drives her. There is no middleman or advocates talking over them or attempting to speak for them. They are the ones who the programming is specifically designed for.
Yeah, so as Maria noted, Aliento offers a great deal of programming. One of their most unique offerings is their art and healing workshops for those who have been impacted by deportation, detention, or the threat of family separation. They have open mics and a rooted gallery.
Besides that great programming that Sophia mentioned, they're also really passionate about community organizing and educating the larger public about immigration issues. With regards to community organizing, they have done grassroots work to advocate for the DREAM Act and other immigration bills. They have a current campaign called Arizona's Future, which is aimed at expanding education opportunities to all Arizona residents, regardless of their immigration status. They've also published some really cool research and polling about how popular in-state tuition for undocumented students is. And that's just part of their mission, as I mentioned, to bring awareness to education inequity. They also have DACA assistance and scholarships. They help with DACA renewals and have a running list of scholarships for undocumented and DACA-eligible students who are navigating the college process. So yeah, that's just a big piece of their work. And you'll notice in my conversation with Reina, that's something that really drives her is that education component for her community.
So we really encourage our listeners to get involved with Aliento. If you're interested, please share their work on social media, join their virtual programming, and donate and volunteer if you can.
After a short break, I'll be speaking to founder of Aliento, Reina Montoya. Thank you so much, Reina, for being on Hyphenated America.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're so excited. Juan Escalante was our first guest, and he said that he was talking about Aliento and all the amazing work you guys are doing, especially your vision for the organization. So we're really excited as an immigration platform to have you, and so you can talk about Aliento and all the cool stuff you guys are doing. So to get us started, after reading about all the wonderful programming offered by Aliento, such as your arts and healings program, open mics and galleries, I'd love to start off by asking how you knew your advocacy work was going to be rooted in creation and creative thinking?
That's a great question. For me, it comes down that I have an artist practice myself. I used to dance professionally back in the day, not too long ago, but it's been a minute. So I used to dance for a professional company that is mainly modern contemporary. And when I was dancing with them, I was also doing community organizing full time. And in the midst of that, my dad got detained and he got in deportation proceedings. Oh, so wow. he was in detention for 9 months. 9 months where I couldn't hug him. I couldn't spend Christmas or holidays. And it was very, very difficult for me at the personal level. I felt that in one hand, you know, I had my community who was so willing to like sign a petition, to make calls, to ensure that my dad would get released. But I felt that nobody really asked how I was doing as a daughter, just as a human being of not having my dad home. So that created a lot of internal turmoil. And I started feeling very abandoned and feeling that I was just more seen as an advocate or an activist or an organizer, but not really as a person. And at that moment, I couldn't probably articulate everything that I'm telling you right now, because I was in so much pain that I really utilized dance for me as a vehicle for me to express, to heal, and to really make sense about what was going on at that moment. And fast forward, later on, we were able to get my dad out of detention.
Oh, so that's great.
Huge accomplishment. Mm-hmm. And I continued to be involved in the community. I was one of the lead organizers that we pushed for DAPA, for DACA, but for parents. Unfortunately, we know how that went due to the court.
I know.
It was horrible.
How old were
you?
Don't mind me asking, when your dad was, or just when, you know, you were going through that hard time of your own.
I was 22.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
I was 22.
You're so young and just like, it's so hard. Like in your 20s, you're like figuring everything out. And then
I had just graduated college. It hadn't even been a year when that happened.
Oh my goodness.
You know, when you graduate college, you have this like image that everything is going to work out.
Yeah, your idealism. And then it's like reality comes knocking on your front door. But I think you touch on a really important topic of like the mental health aspect of not even advocacy, just of coming from a mixed status family. And, you know, it's so much more than the legal battles. It's also about your well-being. And it's like, are we asking? I don't think we realize like the effect it has on kids, on their parents, that constant worry because you're in such a precarious conversation. So I think you're right. Mental health needs to be a big part of like the work that we do. And it's just as an important piece as like passing legislation is like providing mental health care for mixed status families, Latino families, Black families.
You nailed it. I was 22, but my brother was 15 and he's also a DACA recipient. And my sister at that time was 5.
That's trauma. That's like a huge emotional trauma.
And you know, it's different when you're like advocating, and I started advocating really early on for the DREAM Act and then did a lot of like deportation defense and many things. But when it came to my home and really seeing the impact that it had on my little sister, on my brother, my mom, and it became very difficult. So for me, I knew that yes, policy change is pivotal and that's part of the model of Aliento, but we need to be very mindful that when we're talking about policy change, it really needs to be centered on the lived experience of people who are impacted and who are going through it at the same time. And how do we make sure that we don't see people just as advocates, but how can we see them as people and see their full humanity from the bottom up? Because I think that sometimes there's organizations that are very well-meaning and they want to support and they want to advocate, but they don't have that impacted lens.
Yeah,
that makes a big difference.
Or it's just like numbers and statistics for them, but you know, they're not on the ground talking to families and knowing what they're going through. And I think about that with like just a lot of like women of color, like Latina women, Black women that like lead movements. I'm like, is anyone ever asking them if they're okay? Just because, you know, they're like on the front lines, they're like the front of every movement. And it's just like, you know, we need to take the time to, you know, the advocacy work takes such an emotional toll. And even if you believe in it, and even if it's so inspiring in you, it's like, we need to like, make sure that y'all are doing okay. Cause you know, te cuesta tanto, like in Spanish, you know, it just takes such a burden. And that's such a real aspect of advocacy work. So I really like you bringing that in and just being real about it, that it's hard.
secondary trauma is real. And if we continue to remain silent about those challenges, not because we admit that it does take an emotional toll, not because we admit that sometimes it can be challenging being in the front lines, that doesn't mean that we're weaker, but we're actually powerful. Look at all the adversities that we are overcoming. And then yet, how do we make sure that we're filling our cup so we're not replicating the same structures of abuse? Because at the end of the day, if we continue to abuse our bodies and our mental health and we neglect it, then we're not doing transformative work.
Yeah, definitely. And it won't last as much as we'd want it to. And it's not as sustainable. Great. Well, to follow up on what you said is being a dancer yourself and kind of already touching in on the creative process, when you were coming up with Aliento and, you know, the intersection between art and immigration specifically, you know, what kind of inspired you? Did you look at another advocacy org and you're like, I want to be like them? Was it all like from the drawing board and it was all you? You know, what kind of other advocacy orgs were you inspired by that maybe also incorporated the arts?
So Aliento translates into breath for those who do not speak Spanish in the audience. Mm-hmm. But when you give Aliento to someone, it's like giving words of encouragement. Mm-hmm. And for so long, if I can be very real with you, I was complaining about other advocacy organizations because I work for many, full disclosure, I work by organizations here in Arizona and also at the national level. And I kept like criticizing about like they're not really taking care of people, or they want to use it for the media splash, or they want to do this and that.
And the politics of it, definitely.
The politics of it, of course. Mm-hmm. And then I had a really good friend of mine who challenged me, and she said, "Reina, like I think that your criticisms are not complaints. I think that they're valid because, like, you know, you internalize also that, and you start feeling that you're always seeing the bad, but in reality, what you're seeing is an injustice of itself." Mm-hmm. So then that moment I had my friend who challenged me, and she's like, why don't you write about it? If it was up to you and if you had a vision, why don't you do something about it? And at that moment I had already left community organizing. I was not doing it in the day to day because I was 23 and I was becoming jaded and I didn't want to be around like 23-year-old.
So real. Yeah.
So I went into the classroom and I started teaching high school. And that moment, that's when my friend challenged me. And I started thinking, I was exploring with a lot of my students because I taught very different subjects. I was more like humanities teacher. I taught English, philosophy, dance, and Spanish.
Oh, wow.
I had a very interdisciplinary experience as well. So for me at that moment, as going back to your question, it was about what are the gaps that I'm seeing in the community? Yeah. When we say that we're being impacted by people, I saw that in the landscape in Arizona, and even at the national level, if you start seeing those organizations that are more like immigrant-led, they say that they're immigrant-led, people were undocumented like a long time ago, or people have adjusted their status, or then they live in places that are either California or New York, that they don't have the same lived realities. It's very different being undocumented in Arizona than being undocumented in California.
Yeah, we don't have our good liberal, even California has so much work to do, but I'm from Texas, and you know, that's so, you know, the Southwest is such a different terrain than California that has a lot more progressive policies. And that was actually one of my questions is, how is being located in Arizona impacted your mission and the community you serve? As you mentioned, we know Arizona is a super anti-immigrant state. I think of Joe Arpaio. I think of all the like white vigilantes that like to do border patrol work on themselves. And there's a lot of violence on the border. Of course, tragically, there are so many deaths of people that try to, you know, it's a very hostile environment. So I'd love to hear about what it means for Aliento to be located in such an anti-immigrant state.
That's a great question. As you were talking about it, right, Arizona has this reputation of being the epicenter of hate or the laboratory for anti-immigrant laws. We said with the Show Me Your Papers law of SB 1070 in 2010 that it didn't stay in Arizona. It got replicated in Florida, Georgia, Alabama, and they tried their own copycats of the legislation. So for us, it was really important to show the world a different way. I remember I founded Aliento on the summer of 2016, and I remember waking up after the election of 2016.
Yeah.
And many people were freaking out. And I mean, I was very sad. I was very disappointed about what had happened because I'm a DACA recipient still, and there's a lot at stake.
Yeah, a lot weighing in the balance.
And then when that happened, though, there was something very important that it kind of clicked for me, that it's like, we have had this reputation about going through very difficult terrain and anti-immigrant rhetoric and policies, that we have a lot to teach the nation.
Yeah.
And that we can really transform Arizona from being an epicenter of hate towards anti-immigrants to be an epicenter of hope. So how would it look like for us to really see Arizona a place that we see the resilience, the beauty, and the creativity and innovation of our immigrant people that have said, you know, this is the life that we had to endure. These are the traumas that we had to endure, but we have overcome that. And how can we teach the nation that there can be a different way, and that no matter how difficult the terrain it is, we can overcome that together?
Yeah, I love that. I think about how powerful like that reclaiming of the narrative is, just because obviously it's overused and it's tired and it's not the full side of the story. And I think about that with Texas too. I'd love for us to take back the narrative and be like, yes, there's a lot of racist, like anti-immigrant stuff going on, but there's also a very vibrant, undocumented Latino community. So yeah, thanks for framing that so beautifully. And kind of on that note of like reclaiming narratives and, you know, the stories that immigrants can tell the country, we know that immigrants, Latinx folks, and other members of marginalized communities are oftentimes very compelling and powerful storytellers. I think of all my family from Mexico and all the great things that they, you know, all the stories that they've shared since I was a kid. And what stories are the families that you're working with telling you at Aliento, either at open mics, just any, you know, community work that you guys do, since you guys are so like community facing, I'm sure, you know, that one-on-one time with immigrant families must be so powerful. So I'd love to hear, you know, what stories immigrants on the ground are telling you, what are they going through?
Yeah. Oh, there's so much richness there. I feel like we can have a whole
podcast. I know. You're right. Let's give them a podcast.
Yes. But as I was thinking about this question, when you're sharing it, is like, there's so many stories. I feel like that mom who's picking favorites, but right now, I think that it have to take the pulse. For me, it's being able to see the growth of young people. We take a multi-generational approach to our work. Whole families come from babies to grandma.
Oh, I love that.
But being able to see the stories and hear right now, a lot of our young people are struggling because many of them are no longer DACA recipients. So a lot of the conversations is about sometimes people still using the word undocumented when they're DACA recipients without really acknowledging that privilege that
comes
to it. And it's complicated, right? Because I often think about me as a DACA recipient, I'm still not in the same level field as a citizen, right? Or like maybe my sister, just because she was born here, she has way more privileges and opportunities than I do. But then at the same time, I have to be very honest about the challenges that undocumented students are facing now and how they don't have the same opportunities that some DACA recipients have. And the reality is that DACA recipients are no longer the young people. Like, we're coming of age right now. We're in our late 20s or in our like 30s. Mm-hmm. And then many of them are parents. And I hear the stories of DACA recipients being worried about their children who were born in the U.S. And if DACA were completely to be taken away one more time, like the worry that comes with that. I hear undocumented students feeling really worried about, am I going to be able to go to college? And that pains me because that was my struggle, because I was undocumented when I went to college. That was before DACA. Mm-hmm. And then now seeing that it's like, it's this really weird place that, yes, there's been progress in some areas, but then yet there's so much more to do. Yeah. But at the same time, you know, I tell you those stories of hardships, but I also hear the stories of triumph from someone who was a 9-year-old who was a U.S. citizen and who was terrified about SB 1070, the Show Me Your Papers law, who now is like our census project coordinator.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
She's a sophomore in college and she's like helping families like her, that parents that are undocumented and kids that are citizens that are saying, you know what, we're going to take it up to us. And I don't want to make sure that other kid goes through what I went through.
Yeah.
And through storytelling, through sharing our stories and our trajectory, it's in a way for us to not feel so alone and isolated.
Yeah, no, definitely. And as you mentioned, it's just such an ever-changing population, ever-changing like legal dynamics. And I don't think a lot of people realize that like DACA covers such a small percentage of the undocumented population. And like, sometimes we think DACA is enough, and obviously it's not. And I've noticed people fall into that rabbit hole. So again, acknowledging the different privileges and like, who knows what'll happen with who wins a presidential, like, it's just a very precarious situation that's always changing.
And just to paint the picture out there, I love how you're saying it. When we're talking about DACA recipients, we're talking about a little bit over 600,000 people in the whole nation.
Yeah, like less than 10% of the undocumented community. It's ridiculous. It's such a small pedacito.
Yeah, and when we're talking about the undocumented, it's 11 million people.
Yeah.
And if we talk about families, right? Because undocumented people, it's not like, oh, we just categorize it and then we
have complicated lives.
You know?
They're not in a bubble.
We have their children, and we're talking about 17 million people in the whole United States. That's the same size as Germany or Belize.
It's such a sizable chunk. And to think that, DACA is definitely not enough. Like you mentioned, DAPA. There's so many things that we need to pass to support this community. So on the last point that you touched, the work that you guys do with undocumented students is amazing. I was reading through the report that you guys filed, like urging Arizona to support in-state tuition for undocumented students. So I'd love to hear just what initiatives are on your mind when it comes to helping out the undocumented population navigate college. There's obviously so many dynamics. It's the mental health piece, it's the access piece, it's the actual, like, what resources, what scholarships can they even qualify for? Would love to hear just the recent updates with that work, with specifically navigating the college process for undocumented students.
Yeah, here in the state of Arizona, unfortunately, 2,000 undocumented students graduate from high school every single year, and they don't have a clear pathway to higher ed. Here in Arizona, we're talking about that it is you still have to pay out-of-state tuition if you're undocumented or you have DACA. So that's very different than in other places of the United States. So we're seeing a lot of our young people leaving the state, and that is why now Aliento, we have a footprint in 44 different states, and our young people are saying, like, hey, can you create Aliento here at
Boston, I was reading the Aliento hubs. Yes. Like different schools. Yeah, it's amazing.
But right now, I think for us, it's been seeing the power of storytelling, as you mentioned, but also educating our young people in the policies that are creating the harm in the first place. Mm-hmm. So we have successfully taken more than 300 people twice a year to the state capitol, where they're, you know, they're suited up and they're like, they have their policy memos and they're talking to elected officials. And many of them walk away from those meetings, like with their mouth open, wide open, and saying, like, I can't believe these elected officials didn't know what's going on.
Yeah.
So it's been really empowering to see young people reclaiming their stories, reclaiming their strategy, and saying, like, you have a responsibility to ensure that our students here in Arizona have a pathway to go to college. We in Arizona are in a very bad situation that we're not even meeting the needs of the workforce. So when you think even at a macro level, besides the humanitarian efforts, that's the ones for me that they're compelling, but for other people, if you don't even care about this population, it's about also understanding that we're not going to thrive as the state if we don't continue to educate our workforce, if we don't continue to educate people,
that
they're going to be able to thrive in many capacities. So we've been able to move the needle forward. We had the three universities now that are providing 150% rate, not only to DACA, but also undocumented students. And we commissioned a poll this year where we were able to get a statewide poll to understand if Arizona voters will support a change in law to ensure that undocumented students have in-state tuition, and then 3 out of 4.
Yeah, 75%. I saw that. It was such a compelling story, and, you know, public opinion is catching up, I think, to the issue and how urgent it is. And so what an investment it is in their community.
For sure. And we'll continue to do those efforts. We're getting ready to figure out what is it going to look like next year in 2021 if we're still in a pandemic. But definitely it's been really empowering to see students and our hubs, as you mentioned, right? We have a hub at Arizona State University, and students are hosting open mics. They're hosting.
I know, I saw that. It seems so powerful. Yeah, a lot of community storytelling, which is fantastic. So I guess for all of our listeners who would want to help out with Aliento, support your mission, what would you suggest they do? I saw that there's some like online programming, some open mics going on in November. How can we help out? How can we support your mission of supporting the undocumented community in Arizona?
Definitely. There's three things that you can do right now from the comfort of your home. One, give us a follow and share our contact. You don't have to be experts on the subject matter if you care about immigrants. We are putting in content about education components in ways that you can respectfully share other people's stories. I always say that there's that one uncle, that one aunt that might be anti-immigrant. That's where you have the most power. How can you make sure that you're educating other people around immigration and the importance of having a positive solution for all of us? That includes also our undocumented brothers and sisters.
Yeah, definitely.
So definitely educate the people around you. Mm-hmm. Number two, give us a follow on social media. You can definitely do that at Aliento AC and share our content, you know, so then you can get more closer to other participants, mm-hmm. to other maybe undocumented people that are feeling isolated. That's a way that you can really show allyship. Yeah. And then three, I would say that you can definitely come and attend our programs. We're always welcoming to other folks. As I said, we have a footprint in 44 different states and people from all across the nation has joined our programming. And if you felt compelled to that, like another way that is like, I don't have time, I still want to help, what can I do? Definitely pitch in. Maybe you're not buying that pumpkin spice latte from Starbucks and
that was me
$5.
yeah, putting your money where your mouth is, as you said, even if it's a small donation. Thank you so much for providing those like tangible action steps, because you know, that's what it's all about in 2020, you know, is like taking steps forward to, you know, achieve the progress that you want. And your organization is an amazing thing. So we'll definitely advertise those opportunities to our listeners. Thank you so much for talking with me today, Reina. It was so nice.
Thank you so much, Maria. It was wonderful meeting you and being here with you.
Thank you to Reina Montoya for joining us. Be sure to check out Aliento's website, follow them on Instagram and Twitter, and please get involved. Don't forget to check out our website, hyphenatedamerica.org, to access our guides, fact sheets, and weekly breakdown of immigration news, and also follow us on social media.
If you have immigration-related topics that you're interested in us breaking down with the help of experts, feel free to email us at team@hyphenatedamerica.org or DM us on Instagram or Twitter.